It's the great Dante Read Through.
It's the great Dante Read Through, where we are reading through all of the comic strip, The Adventures of Nicolai Dante. Co-created by Robbie Morrison and Simon Fraser from the weekly science fiction anthology comic, 2000 AD.
I'm Simon Fraser.
And I'm Edie Nugent, freelance writer and Simon's wife. Join us as we swashbuckle our way through the Russian Empire of the future. Warning, there will be spoilers. We will be talking in depth about these comics, so if you haven't read them yet, listen at your own risk. To join our book club and read along with us, go to shop.2000ad.com to pick up the books in hard copy or digital.
Today we're reading Thieves' World, found in Prague's 1538 to 1544.
Hi, Simon.
Hey, Edie.
And hello, irregulars.
Hi,
welcome back to the Great Dante Read-Through. And I just wanted to say, I think it's Thieves' World.
Thieves?
Not Thieves' World. It's possessive. There's an apostrophe after it. So it's Thieves' World.
But it's not.
The Thieves'.
It isn't. It's Thieves' World.
The Thieves'.
The Thieves' World. Vrosky Mir.
It's the Thieves'. The Thieves'
World. Well, listen. You have, again, added to the list of things you're going to talk to Robbie about.
Okay, who wrote it, who drew it, who lettered it?
It was written by Robbie Morrison.
Yep.
It was drawn by Simon Fraser.
By you.
It was colored by Gary Caldwell, and it was lettered by Annie Parkhouse.
Fantastic.
And can I just say that the opening graphic they've chosen for the collected edition, which is the picture of the Contessa de Winter descending stairs, is the worst.
They do like to blow up like little pictures
tiny
that you've drawn. So like by definition, they're not going to have as much detail. And they just like to blow it up page size as the lead page in the Hachette book is what you're talking about.
It looks very nice when it's John M. Burns, but it doesn't look like when it's my little tiny mistakes, which are blown up to magnificent size. So thanks for that.
So you can enjoy that.
Hachette.
In the Hachette collection.
I can, yes. Anyway, carry on.
Okay, so we open on the Tsar, czaring it up on a floating royal barge.
This is him in his full pomp. Never gets better than this for him.
No. And I noticed the barge is sort of like that couch he was lounging on in Deadlier Than the Male.
Right.
And I feel like I'm just starting to notice the Tsar's like Mar-a-Lago style chintz. I don't know why it's standing out to me so much now, or if he's ramping it up. I don't know.
Probably. I mean, he's certainly aware of symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly likes that. Though, looking at it here right now, it's like he's got an alarmingly small number of medals on his chest. I think if you're looking at like dictators, traditionally dictators
have
like,
have a lot.
There's a wall of ribbons in the chest. He's only got like 4 or 5 medals on there, which is like, okay. Maybe he invented them all. I don't know. But, you know, you get someone like Hermann Göring had some of the largest medals that were made at the time, and he had an iron cross specially made for him, which was larger than anyone else's, because that's the kind of guy that Hermann Göring was.
He wanted to have the largest iron cross.
Yes.
Well, so I guess one area in which we see restraint from the Tsar, medals. So great panel here of the Tsar, flanked by the Lord Protector on the right, and Jenna and Arkady and Dante in his dress whites to the left.
Mm-hmm.
We have the space egg looming overhead, itself flanked by like, are those battleships? What would we call these things?
I designed the Tsar's battleships to be as blunt as possible.
Floating like bricks don't.
Floating like bricks don't. Exactly.
Indeed,
floating
indeed,
like bricks. Exactly in the way bricks don't.
Yes.
But I wanted them to look like non-aerodynamic, because there's nothing aerodynamic about these ships. They don't fly by the merch of aerodynamics. So it doesn't matter what shape they are.
Matter.
If they look like slabs of oppressive cement, that's great, because that's what they are.
Well, I love these little notations that you give on certain sci-fi stuff about, you know, we still draw these spaceships as aerodynamic,
yes,
even though they don't have to be.
Right.
You know, of course, like a sound of no sound effects in space.
Mm. I mean, X-wings don't really make any sense.
Space travel is far too sexy. It's much harder, and you know.
It's funny because the X-wings are not doesn't make any sense, because that's like it's supposed to be an atmospheric ship, which it is apparently in the new movies. They've got them flying in atmosphere, which is like, all right, fair enough. But TIE fighters are, that's exactly how you would design a space fighter, because
mm-hmm.
it doesn't really, its orientation is almost unimportant. because it has like these sort of panels on the side which provide some sort of propulsion guidance, and then there's a pod in the middle, and it doesn't really matter which way it's going, because it's space. Space doesn't have an up or a down or a left or a right, and it doesn't have wind currents or any of that to be able. So it just that makes sense to me. Anyway,
right.
A great design.
So TIE Fighters, yay.
TIE Fighters, great, yeah. Good design.
X-Wings, maybe less so.
I mean, they look cool.
So the Tsar has a big announcement. So mm-hmm. These are called, what do we call these? Battleships? Warships?
Something like that, yeah.
I'm going to go with battleship. Okay.
Go for it.
So the Tsar has a big announcement. He's returning to the tradition of serfdom.
Hmm.
And Arkady claims that this will cure poverty, homelessness, and unemployment. And apparently Arkady is in charge of implementing this new plan. Which seems like kind of a big job to give a ward.
Yeah, I mean, he seems very confident in his abilities.
Yeah, but I'm still beating this drum that Arkady is like a sleeper agent and he's going to double-cross the Tsar at just the right moment. Because, like, this kid was real close to Daddy Dimitri. You know what I'm saying? I don't think he's just left all of that in the background, you know? Like, his dad was, like, clutching him, like, right before he died and stuff.
I'm looking at the readers right now who've read it before, and the readers looking back at me, and we're going, nothing.
Uh-huh.
We're not saying anything.
No words will be given.
We're not doing any spoilers.
Yeah, I'm very anti-spoilers.
She's very, very anti-spoilers. She really gets upset about spoilers.
I do, because it distracts me from this. I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. It distracts me from the story. If in the back of my head, I've heard something and my brain will constantly be trying to connect it to the present moment. Is that thing they told me why this guy is acting this way in this scene? Is that thing they told me going to happen before or after this thing we're watching now? And it just completely distracts me. I am not neurotypical. You can't do that to me. I need as little information as possible.
Right.
But I do like to speculate.
Okay.
And so I am speculating
stick
about
a pin on that one for the moment,
Arkady.
And we'll come back to
and
it.
And also what this got me thinking about Dimitri, part of me doesn't think Dimitri is dead because he had a crest too, and we are establishing that crests bring people back from all kinds of horrible states.
Unless it's like the twins or people we don't like.
Right.
Like Nastasia.
That's right. Well, Nastasia had the flesh melted from her bones. I don't think you can come back from that. But like these sort of like flesh wound things that we don't really see how bad they are. Like we saw him sort
Andreas. Andreas died of a flesh wound as far as I can see.
He did.
Yeah.
Andreas definitely could be a candidate for coming back, though I don't think so because he ended up as a nice guy. So I would be surprised if...
Yeah, he closed his arc.
Yeah, he closed his arc. But I don't think Dimitri is necessarily dead. He had a crest. And if the Lord Protector is here, why not Dimitri? And here's my thought was, is his body recovering at that monastery where Jocasta is? I don't know why. Just made me think of it. I digress.
You don't want me to answer the
nope,
question.
Nope, I'm just saying it.
Listen, well, this, you were on record.
We're speculating.
You have put your speculations out there.
Put my speculations out there.
Indeed.
So the salient part of this scene is the announcement of this new serfdom policy mm-hmm. and how a citizen speaks up against this policy from the crowds below that this that the imperial... what did I call it? Imperial barge or whatever mm-hmm. is floating over.
Gondola or
sort of, yeah.
Landau. I think it's a Landau, isn't it? When you've got a carriage, an open carriage like that.
A Landau.
Yeah, I think that's
what
it's
called. Is that
what it is? It's called a Landau.
Okay.
I could be wrong. But anyway.
Floating royal barge. Anyway,
indeed.
So it's floating over these crowds as he's delivering these edicts, and somebody pipes up from the crowd speaking against this policy, calling it modern slavery, and it seems like the folks around this guy are kind of agreeing with him when the Lord Protector just blast fries him on the spot. And the people around the smoking skeleton change their tune, shouting, "All hail the Conqueror."
And the Conqueror looks pretty chuffed about that.
Conqueror looks very happy.
I like that drawing of the Tsar. I did enjoy drawing
Tsar looks very pleased. Close up his face looking pleased.
Cheshire cat, happy Tsar.
Indeed. And we cut then to the interior of one of these battleships, and it is fancy looking on mm-hmm. the inside. Jenna has a fancy bedroom aboard one of these, and she sort of walks down a hallway and opens a door to her bedroom to find who waiting for her?
Can't think. Oh, yeah, him.
Oh, yeah, him. It's Dante.
Nicholas Dantoid.
It's Dantoid. And they banter about ladies' bedchambers for a mo.
Mm-hmm.
Before Dante brings up the whole serfdom situation. And Jenna just seems like beaten down and deluded here. Because she's claiming, oh, I've spoken to my father and this is only going to be a temporary measure.
Yeah, I mean, she's wrestling with some issues here, clearly.
I mean, has she been paying attention? Like,
yes.
I can't believe she'd buy it
to
for
an
a
extent.
Second.
I mean, you have to remember, she is essentially Ivanka Trump. Oof. And do you really have any sympathy for her? So yeah, she's coming from there.
She's smarter than Ivanka though, and she actually cares about people. And I can't say the same for Ivanka.
Well, we don't really know much about Ivanka except, you know, anyway, but it's a journey. Again, you don't really want me to answer this
question.
Okay,
you don't want me to answer. Okay, got it. All right.
I mean, there's a tension there.
So there's tension. Dante mentions that the last serfdom enacted in Russia lasted 200 years.
Arguably never stopped.
And then they argue about their long, slow kiss in the rain that felt as if it was never going to end, according to Dante. Which is pretty sexy, actually.
Yeah?
I feel like that's a sexy description.
You reckon?
Yeah, I liked it. Long, slow kiss in the rain.
All right, then.
Yeah.
Shame it's stiflingly hot outside right now.
Yes, we are a bit steamy here, recording. But Jenna remembers the weird word of warning her father gave her about not getting too close to Dante. Mm-hmm. I still say this is because the Tsar plans on killing him somehow, because fatherly advice is just not his thing. But Jenna then says that she's afraid that her father is going to hurt Dante if she gets involved with him again. But Dante goes for it anyway, and their kiss is explosive.
And that's a circular panel. I think that's the second circular panel I've done in this whole comic.
The circular panel of Dante and Jenna kissing.
Dante and Jenna, exactly, yes. I didn't do many of them.
What was the other circular panel?
There's one in like the first, in the when Dante gets the crest initially, there's a round panel in there when one of the twins throws like nanomines in the air.
Oh, okay.
And I did a circular panel there. And I remember it was a pain in the ass to do it at the time. And I'm going, this is a nuisance. Why do I do this? I don't need to do this. So don't do it. And then I thought, it's a nice circular panel of them kissing. I should do that.
It is a nice circular panel.
I'm playing around. I've looking at the layouts now, it's like they're fairly conventional layouts on Dante. That was deliberate. The point was it was supposed to look kind of traditional. It was supposed to look like an old traditional British adventure comic, like Trigon Empire or something like that. So I don't do very many fancy layouts. And I got out of the habit of doing fancy layouts. And I've only really started doing them again recently. In Hershey, I've done some layouts. And now I'm doing another job, which I think I can talk about. Yeah, I can talk about it.
Can you talk about it?
Yeah, I'm working on Stingray. Haha, Stingray.
Stingray.
Which for Gerry Anderson, or the Gerry Anderson Company, the Anderson Company. And I'm doing really fancy layouts for that.
And who is that being written by?
That is being written by Nick Abadzis. Eisner-winning writer.
Eisner-winning of Laika.
Yes.
Nick Abadzis, who also did the 10th Doctor comic for Doctor Who for many years.
He did Hugo Tate for Deadline, of course, if you're into his work. And he's a very good writer, and he's done a really, really remarkable job on this. So we're working on that right now.
Anyways, anyone who understands nostalgia, it is Nick Abadzis.
Specifically, British TV comics-y nostalgia. He nails the Stingray tone perfectly. But I think... Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Our ideas of Stingray in our head, I mean, mine are. I don't know how, I can't speak for you or anyone else, but my idea of Stingray in the head is certainly better than the actual reality of it. Watching Stingray again as an adult was like, oof, wow, okay, this is a very puppety show.
It is.
Thunderbirds manages to be less puppety and more kind of, it's definitely the better show, definitely more accomplished. Stingray is like almost there, but it's very puppety. And it's like, oh, right, okay.
I had fun watching it.
Yeah. We've only watched like five.
I still want to unravel the mystery of Marina and why she never talks and how she looks like a human even though she's supposed to be from fish people. Which leads me to wonder, where are her fish parts? We're not seeing them. She does wear clothing.
Again.
I'm just going to leave
that
there.
It's very much a kid's show, and I don't think you're ever going to get answers to these questions.
So anyway,
sorry, round panels, layouts, which I did here and didn't do again. Anyway, so big thoom, vadoom.
Right, so Dante kisses her. Their kiss is explosive, or rather an energy beam from an unseen source takes out part of their ship. And Dante and Jenna feel that blast, and it seems it's taken a chunk out of the side of the ship that they specifically are in. They sort of are thrown by this blast. Mm-hmm. Then there's like wreckage. I think they're still inside the blown out part of the ship.
Whether the ship's crashed or not, we're not quite sure. But anyway, there's definitely a big hole. Some guys come in wearing sort of like combat armor.
I put green see-through visor helmets.
Yeah.
I could not figure out how to describe that thing.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And Cybermen looking metal suits.
Yeah.
That's your modern Cyberman, not your Mondasian Cyberman.
Yep.
And flame-throwing guns, they come out of nowhere, looking for the Tsarina and killing anyone else they find.
Yes, and Dante is pissed.
Dante finds Jenna first, thankfully.
He does, he does.
Her face is beat up and bloody, and she's got some shrapnel in her side.
Yes, she does.
And yeah, Dante is pissed.
And here we have the first appearance of the Dante Biocrest shield.
So here we go. So I was saying the helmet dudes advance on them and Dante goes feral, absolutely feral in protection of Jenna, doing a really cool shield thing with his crest biomech.
Which he has never done before. Haha, new special ability.
I was really impressed. I'm really impressed. It looks great.
It looks good.
Basically, biomech stuff is forming a really cool sort of crescent shape shield. That is blocking the blasts from the green visor guys.
Yeah, and then Dante basically wades in and slices them up.
Yes, well, I love the close-up panel, if you want to go back to that page. I love that close-up panel of Dante's blood-spattered face and the kinetic energy in the panels leading up to it. It's just great. The motion of him coming at them, him sort of jumping up, pushing his foot into the face of one of the visor guys while coming down hard on the next one with his shield. It's just great.
Action.
Really good action. Lovely bloody close-up. I love the great Gary Caldwell coloring
good
there.
Coloring, yeah, really good coloring.
In that he's angry, so the whole thing is washed red, but there's a darker red for the blood on his face. Like, it's just great. It's great. Very moody and awesome.
Indeed.
You don't hurt Johnny Dante's Jenna. You don't do that. We cut back to the space egg interior, where Arkady and the Tsar and Dante discuss the day's events in the war room. Arkady and Dante are sniping at each other, and the Tsar is like, settle down, kids. We need to discuss the Mafia.
Indeed. Yes.
And the Mafia, remember them?
The Mafia.
The Mafia.
The Russian Mafia.
So here's where I will break and say, especially last episode, and I feel like I did it for more than one episode, honestly, I kept talking about the hunting party being where we got the Vladimir, Jocasta, and Dmitri backstory, but my mistake, it is Battleship Potemkin, episode 22, Battleship Potemkin, where Dante and Jocasta chat on the snowy land of Archangel, and apparently one snow-covered field is like another to my brain. In the hunting party, they're on the Romanov stalking grounds in the snow, and in Potemkin, Dante and Jocasta jet off in the Strike Hawk to go stop the war, air quotes.
And we do all the back, the exposition of the back history.
Right, there's a line, and in that exposition of the back history, which has a couple of really lovely composite panels by you, by the way.
I was pleased with
where
that.
Where we have sort of the outline of the Tsar's face and smaller pictures within it. Very, very, what I see as classic Simon Fraser flair, and I love it, is there is a line in there that Dante reminds Jocasta of a young Vlad. So I mentioned that in the last episode. I said, I'm pretty sure that she likes Dante because he reminds her of young Vladimir. And
well,
she says
certain,
it.
There's she a says it. There is a certain element of that there. He's a bit of an old rogue. You can feel that.
Well, she's saying before he got like truly evil that he was sort of devil may care and
I think that is evident. I hope that's evident. I did try and make that evident in the way I draw
in
him,
the way you draw the Tsar.
I mean, there's a wit to him. He's not just sort of blankly horrible like Dmitri is. He's got a sense of humor and he's got self-awareness, and you know, I think he's probably quite funny if he's on his off, you know, in if he's off work and relaxing, which I know he never does, but you know, that's a thing that could happen.
So I completely lost my place. Here we go. Right. So going back to that little aside about how I was wrong about when the backstory was, and it was in Potemkin.
Yes.
Vladimir was the eldest son of the Makarov Mafia clan. And I had to work this out with you. I got confused. And he, Dmitri, and Jocasta were given to Ivan the Oppressor to keep the Makarovs and the Romanovs from attacking Ivan.
Yes.
Right? It's keeping the families from trying to usurp his power.
Yes.
I chatted with you off mic, and apparently whatever clan Ivan the Oppressor hailed from is not disclosed, you said.
I don't remember if I was ever told. Maybe Robbie told me at one point. It's not written down anywhere that I know of. Maybe someone will know this and I don't, which you probably, maybe. I don't know if we ever told what Ivan the Oppressor was or who he was.
Yeah. Well, a little bit more of housekeeping. We talked also about how last episode about how they didn't go into details on the birth of the Romanov kids, and they do in Potemkin a bit. It's called a clone breeding program, and they pooled their genes, Jocasta and Dmitri, to create a bloodline of quote unquestionable purity, which is funny when you're talking about a brother and sister, but
Yes,
unquestionable purity.
Incestual purity.
So that's, it's a clone breeding thing.
Yes, exactly.
So
they were, they came from vats. They
Jocasta
were not.
Jocasta wasn't birth, not actually no give, birth and no babies.
She didn't actually give birth to them, which may, right. maybe explain why she's so casual
may,
about them.
May explain yes. some of all of their issues, yes. frankly.
Right.
So anyway, back to the matter at hand. The Tsar and Arcady and Dante discuss the mafia. Well, apparently the clans are gaining power. Mm-hmm. And the Slodkin Assassin Society, which I guess is a clan, has made money off of the war, business doing assassinations during the war,
yep.
and is challenging the established clans now for supremacy in mm-hmm. the mafia world. And the helmet guys who came for Jenna were allegedly part of the new Moscow mafia linked to the older mafia of the Yeltsin clan.
Okay.
And that's Papa Yeltsin. We're talking
shout
about.
Out to the Yeltsin clan.
Right. So
this was relatively current. I mean, Boris Yeltsin was still alive at this point. So yeah, we're referencing contemporary Russian history at the time.
There you go. So the Tsar and his new Iago Arkady want to know if the full clan is behind this kidnapping attempt, or if it was like a rogue squad that didn't have official clan sanctions. So they're trying to figure that out to deal with mm-hmm. how to respond to this yep. attack.
Dante is not for fucking around.
Yeah. Well, Dante, being a man who was raised in the thieves' world, is charged to break up the clans for the Tsar so they aren't so powerful, and also to kill everyone responsible for harming Jenna in the kidnap attempt.
Okay.
Okay.
He seems keen.
Yeah, he's very keen. Dante goes to visit Jenna in the Space Egg Hospital wing, mm-hmm. and they have some cute banter around him being ordered to thieves' world, and he says all he wants really to steal is a kiss. So he surprise kisses Jenna, still doing the surprise kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Who smilingly, so obviously she was into it, smilingly says he's only gotten away with that because she's drugged.
Fair.
I guess that's cute. It raised several red flags for me that he's still forcing kisses on her before she can even, like, breathe. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, oh, you wouldn't have gotten that unless I was drugged. And I'm like, okay. Romantic, I guess. I mean, who knows what's romantic with these two anymore?
I'm lost. There's an awful lot of weird traffic going back and forward with this relationship. Who knows at this point?
There's a lot of road under those wheels.
She seems to be smiling, so let's
she's
take that
smiling,
as a win
so
for
we'll
everybody
take that
concerned.
As a nice indicator, yeah. but generally we want to establish yeah. people are smiling before we kiss them, but hey.
Yeah.
I do love Dante's little facial reaction that you did, where he's plotting to, like, plant that kiss on her. Mm-hmm. That's a great little face you did there.
You missed your face.
A little mischief face.
Dante missed your face.
Mm-hmm. So we turn the page and get a great city shot of St. Petersburg as it stands now.
It's Moscow, I think. It's Moscow. New Moscow, there you go. New Moscow. Suffered greatly because the great face of the Tsar was in Moscow.
The face palace is in Moscow.
Yeah, because I put it in the salient of the river Moscow. Is it River Moscow?
Thank you.
That's where the Kremlin is at the moment. So that's
okay.
why I put, there's little bits of Kremlin left around in the
Got
edge
it.
Of it. But the,
okay.
the face itself has been
annihilated. So the Face Palace was in New Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
The ruins of the Face Palace, now known as the Potemkin Crater,
mm-hmm.
is a giant hologram of the Tsar beaming up now, looming over the city.
Just to kind of distract from the hole.
The hole in the ground. So New Moscow is also a hive of scum and villainy because the imperial forces haven't bothered to rebuild it or it seems enforce any kind of order on mm-hmm. the city. So now we're off to Thieves' World, which has flourished in these environs. It's a ruthless alliance of clans and organizations that control criminal enterprise apparently across the empire. So that's the whole world, right? Because Russia owns
yeah,
everything.
Pretty much.
They've apparently outlasted all the legitimate Russian regimes, is what we're being told.
Mm-hmm.
Governments may come and go, empires rise and fall, but the world of crime would never die, says Maxim Petrov in Imperial Gangster, his book. So we have a new author and a new book.
Yeah, a new one. Part of the bibliography of Dante.
Indeed. The Dante Library. When I started writing this down, I was like, maybe I just go back in my notes and find it all because I wish I kept a list. I don't know why. I feel like I want to have a list of all these books in the Dante Library. For what reason? I know not. Dante and Elena basically punch their way through one of the sexy show places.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming we kind of don't see exactly where they enter, but we see a downtown Kremlin. Kremlin's basically been turned into pleasure palaces, essentially.
Yes,
the remaining buildings
yeah.
are sexy time shows and brothels and such.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dante and Elena punch their way through one of them. And
I did some quite mature-looking women of the night, shall
yes,
we say?
Yes, you did. Sort that, of roaming the streets.
Yes, so that there's a reason for that, because I was living in 2003.
Oh my God,
I was
are
living,
these the women?
No, they're not exactly, but they're very similar. Okay. And I was, so I was living above a street in Lyon in 2003 during the heat wave, the canicule, and I was living above a street which had still had prostitutes working it at the time. I don't know if they're still there. I'm not sure. But they were quite mature women. They had a specialist audience, shall we say. And they were very nice. Two of them were sisters. One was Portuguese. We chatted a bit. And they sort of checked for my car to make sure that the police didn't get me for...
ticketed or tow it.
Ticketed and so forth. They were, you know, they were very nice. And they were good neighbors, we say. but they did have a place of business in the apartment building I was living in. And so you could, they would go up and down the stairs and they would say bonjour. And they had their client, clientele. Who are usually older men, but sometimes young, very young and embarrassed looking men, or boys even. That was their business. And they were dealing with a specific market. And that was agreed that was a worthwhile and reasonable thing to do. And they seemed to be the perfectly professional women. They had nice cars and they were well-dressed and they were...
Sex work is work.
Yep.
Listen.
But I remember I was lying in bed in that even. I think I was working on Family at the time. And you could hear them down in the street below, and they're like telling stories to each other and like cackling.
Oh my God!
They all had these.
It.
They had this one of them, this incredible cackle. She was like cackling all night. It was like incredible sound. I remember
that's
it to this
amazing.
Day. Anyway, so this is kind of
an homage to them. Yes,
to
the older les
filles, as they're referred to, euphemistically.
Oh my God! Amazing. So they punch their way into one of these establishments and hurl someone through. Some kind of a window frame.
Mm-hmm.
So we have our first defenestration of the Ark.
Woohoo!
Drink.
Do I have a drink?
You go ahead and drink. There you go. Good job.
Mm-hmm.
So Dante eventually punches his way to a meeting with Igor Solodkin, mm-hmm. who is manager of the Red Square Pleasure District. Wait a minute. Solodkin? So this is the same Solodkin of the assassin dude later?
Is it?
I feel like it's the same name.
Okay. I don't know.
I feel like it's the same name. Renko Solodkin.
Different guy?
Is this different? Is it Solodkin and okay, I'm confused.
Maybe Robbie's confused.
Could he make two names that were that similar and not have them?
I don't know. All
right.
Don't ask me to interpret.
All right.
What's going on
okay,
in
I won't. So this guy's a manager of the Red Square Pleasure District.
Right.
And apparently he had Dante beat up as a young man back when Dante was kicking around Thieves' World.
Well.
Thieves' World.
And revenge is sweet, it seems.
Right. Well, Dante informs Igor that the Red Square is now under his control. So you're probably wondering, like, how did that happen exactly? Dante and Elena just, like, punch their way through a number of mafia clans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's mostly right, and we'll soon find out. But Dante gets all of the various mafia clan lead henchmen to strip in front of him and march back to their bosses naked, including this Igor guy. To tell them that there's a new godfather in town.
Yes.
So the lead henchies and Igor have to walk naked through Red Square. Meanwhile, Dante somehow claims all of the Kremlin, right?
Right.
So then we get to see how Dante and Elena did it. So Dante won the entire criminal enterprise of Yuri Dudikov
mm-hmm.
in a poker game and then ran him through when Yuri accused him of cheating. Apparently didn't kill him, though, because a hospital is mentioned, so...
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to see Dante, I guess, in a better light here. We're
maybe
distinctly pointing out that this guy wasn't murdered. The brothers Kalashnikov heard Dante was planning to break up their sex trafficking ring. We know how much Dante approves of things like sex trafficking. So they confronted him in Alexander Plaza, where Dante dispatched all three brothers with the huntsman.
Right.
And then the pair seized control of the underground fight circuit by pitting Elena against their leader, Senga Smolensky.
Smolensky.
In a fight, and Elena just pretty much wipes the floor with her while Dante enjoys a beer.
There you go.
So that takes us to some empty chairs around the underworld table in the sort of Thieves Guild's
mm-hmm.
meeting room where our old pal Papa Yeltsin.
They may be gangsters, but they still have meetings.
They have meetings. Papa Yeltsin, well, that's like a big part of being a gangster is you get to have a meeting around a round table and
mm-hmm.
get to sit like you're an important person, right?
There you go.
So Papa Yeltsin is discussing these events with the remaining clan leaders, and one of them questions Papa's leadership and implies because he's gay, that's why Dante and others would challenge his authority.
There's a lot of that going on.
So Papa finally uses one of those guys with the backpack water cooler jugs filled with vodka that we saw many moons ago that have the gas pump hoses on them.
It's kind of like the most unpleasant tequila girl in the world.
Yeah, they force feed the unfortunate bigot named Carl what I assume is a lethal amount of vodka. Mm-hmm. It happens off panel.
Yes.
And then just as you're about to say, yeah, Papa, like, fuck that homophobe, Papa basically threatens to sexually assault Dante if he doesn't leave the thieves' world. Like, right after he's killed someone for being homophobic, we get this threat.
Okay. Well, so, I don't know if you can expect him to be, he's an immoral gangster. I don't think you can expect him to be consistent.
Yes, but this is the non-consensual vibe I've talked about with Papa since his introduction.
Yep.
And it's canon now, unfortunately.
It is.
And my note is, we are not your punchlines.
Fair enough.
Referring to the queer community there.
Indeed.
It bothers me. It bothers me that the way this guy is evil is by threatening sexual assault on people. Like, the fact that it's a gay character doing that matters. And he seems to do it a lot and kind of lightly in a way that other characters don't. Like the bad guys in Dante World definitely threaten sexual assault and commit it all the time, indeed. Right?
And then get killed immediately.
Mm-hmm. But Papa Yeltsin sort of bounces around saying it in a jovial way, and it just, I don't know, it bothers me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back at the space egg, the Tsar and Arkady...
they're having a Zoom meeting.
They have a Zoom meeting. Mr. Arkady, I definitely won't be usurping anyone, Romanov. Chat with Dante via hologram about how Dante has to hang tight down in Thieves' World for a bit, which I find suspicious. Because, he's done, whatever. But apparently they have some kind of plan they've hatched because Dante says, can we hurry things up a little, right?
Yeah.
To which the Tsar replies that Dante needs to spend longer in Thieves' World to make sure he doesn't succumb to temptation.
Okay.
Of exactly what, we don't know. It's a weird little exchange there. Mm-hmm. But after they log off, the Tsar asks Arkady to keep an eye on Dante.
Right.
So we cut to Dante and Elena visiting a strip club for reasons.
Yes.
Only to be faced with a crew of about 20 or so armed henchmen of the, is it Salonkin?
Salonkin.
Salonkin. So we had Salodkin. Now we have Salonkin.
Oh, that makes perfect
sense.
That's
really confusing. Okay. Assassin Society. So these are the assassin guys. I'm assuming not related to Igor. Someone correct me if I'm wrong.
Probably not.
It's headed up by Renko Salonkin, an ex-military dude who was imprisoned for killing a superior officer. Now he holds a seat on the Thieves' Council, and that would be the table gathering where we just saw Papa Yeltsin.
Right.
So Renko tells Dante that he and his henchmen are there to protect the proprietor of this establishment they are in and tell Dante to leave. So they face off and duel, and Renko has kind of a cool lightsaber sword that manages to melt some of Dante's bioblade.
Yeah, it seems to manage to damage the bioblade, which
that ain't good.
That's never happened
and
before.
And unusual, right? We haven't seen that.
I don't think we've seen this before, no.
But just as they're getting into it, who walks down the stairs? But...
The Contessa de Winter in a terribly drawn panel.
You don't like that, huh?
No, I do not.
You don't like her entrance?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
Well, there you have it. So the Contessa takes Dante up to her office. I guess it's her office. There are some floating chairs, small tables, and a big desk.
Yes. The name of the club seems to be Fatale, which is somewhat on the nose for this character.
But remember, it's floating chairs. That's how you know you're in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Floating
chairs.
Good job.
I quite like those floating chairs. They look quite comfy.
They do look comfy. Hmm. So they banter a bit, and the Contessa claims she didn't intend to murder Dante when she pushed his ship off of a cliff. After the Romanov job, episode 27, because she knew there was water underneath and so gave him a soft landing.
Yeah, that's not how water landings work with spaceships or ships. I mean, you hit the water hard, you hit the water like concrete. It's like, it's not going to hurt.
It's not very convincing.
Anyway, she didn't care.
She didn't care.
She's just trying to soft pedal it.
She's trying to manipulate Dante, which, to be fair, she's very good at it.
That's what she does.
So Dante tries to get her to tell him how she's operating a strip joint in Papa's territory after she robbed him blind after the Romanov job. And before he can get an answer, she's unzipping her dress.
Mm-hmm.
But Dante is like, I trust you not at all.
Yeah, I think he's got the message now after...
How many times did it take?
I don't know, like 4 or 5 times she's left him to die. So, yeah.
I'm impressed with Dante for actually being smart and thinking with his big head for a change.
It doesn't take long for it to turn around.
Well, this really pisses off the Contessa, who tries to bait Dante by taunting him that the Tsar has broken him and that he's keeping himself pure for Jenna. Then they argue, and Contessa scratches Dante's face and says that Jenna's got him by the balls.
Right. He's obviously turned on by this.
I guess so, because Dante responds by choking her, lifting her off the ground, which, ow. Like, I feel like this scene really underestimates how much it would hurt for someone to grab you around the throat and lift you up by your throat.
Yeah.
Because she recovers quite quickly.
She does.
And I feel like that would be awful and really debilitating, but anyway.
She's taking the opportunities that are presented to her.
Dante's anger turns to passion.
Indeed.
And he's soon knocking Boots off that big desk I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, listen, it's an anger fuck. But they both of them seem to be into it. It seems to be consensual, so...
Yes. So, Arcady has a little spy insect thing that is beaming a feed from the office back to Arcady. The Contessa office back to Arcady, who seems real relaxed in a reclining chair with a brandy watching this live feed.
Is he old enough to drink?
So Arcady's totally wanking off to this, yes? I mean, that's what this panel means?
Maybe?
Is it a maybe? Look at the position he's in.
I don't remember drawing it
I'm
that way.
I'm looking for a box of tissues.
Fairly
is
sure
what I'm doing
I
right
didn't
now.
Do that, but listen, I think it's a good idea.
He's about to wank off, dude. That's what that is.
He might.
Okay. Anyway, so this makes me think that Arcady and the Contessa are in cahoots, right? Because she brought him right to that room with Arcady's bug in it. There are a lot of rooms, presumably, in this establishment.
Yeah.
Dante and Elena went to this establishment of their own volition. Mm-hmm. They ended up there. We don't know of anyone calling them specifically to a meeting there. They just went there. So there happened to be a bug that happened to be positioned on this so that it could catch.
Mm-hmm.
It seems very planned to me. So I feel like the Contessa is backdoor in cahoots.
Okay.
So we cut back to Dante and the Contessa post-coital on a rug that looks like it's made out of a wampa. Is that a wampa?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Looks like a wampa skin.
I can't remember what I drew that for.
You remember what a wampa is,
yeah,
right?
It's from Star Wars. But this is not... don't think it's a wampa.
It's the Hoth beast.
I think a wampa would be bigger than that. I don't remember. It looks like vaguely like Babastis from Watchmen. Anyway.
Okay.
Don't know. Can't remember. Anyway, I think I made it up. It's an alien. Fuzzy creature.
If you thought that sex would dampen Dante's anger, well, no. He's still mad getting dressed and has no time for the Contessa's after-sex flirting. So Dante finishes the question he was asking before the coitus interruptus. Why is Contessa working for Papa after she robbed him blind? According to Contessa, she ended up bringing the Romanov jewels back to Papa because she couldn't hawk them with the Raven Corps on her ass. They were too hot. So she claims she returned the jewels to Papa and somehow got a percentage of the profits, which I'm like, what? You robbed this dude who's like the head of the thieves world and you come back with his jewels and he's going to give you a percent of the profits? I feel like your gift is him not killing you. I don't know how she's negotiating percentages.
She's a talented manipulator. She's obviously managed to work something out, which is, you know,
impressive. She says Papa appreciates her skills, air quotes.
Clearly she's talented. So.
This all sounds like BS to me, all of this.
Well, listen.
There's something going on here.
One, she lies.
She lies.
We know she lies.
Yeah.
That's her thing.
I feel like Tsar or somebody installed her because they knew that they could get to Dante with her for reasons. I don't know.
Possible.
Anyway, possible. Dante agrees with me somewhat. He smells the BS, asking the Contessa what her angle really is. And Contessa tells him that Papa has become a tyrant and overreaching, and that the attack on Jenna was a warning to the Tsar. Other clan leaders are nervous and afraid he'll lead them into war with the Tsar. So the Contessa is maneuvering Salonkin and his assassins to take over the Thieves Guild by force. So Dante still says, what's in it for you? You still haven't told me. And the Contessa claims she's going to steal the Thieves Council war chest. That's what all of this council maneuvering and alliance with Salonkin is about. So they have a war chest where all of the different clans put money into it. So that they're all financially involved in the council continuing.
So a mutual fund.
Yeah, mutually assured destruction kind of a thing.
Security.
Okay. Security. But now she wants to ditch Salonkin and wants Dante to help her. Right?
Right.
So that's where we're going to put a pin in this with a naked Contessa straddling the head of what may be a wampa or that other thing you
who
said.
Who knows? Babastis.
Babastis.
But I could be wrong.
Who's Babastis?
It's Adrian Veidt's weird mutated lynx. But it was red, though.
The lynx!
Yeah, but it was red, so never mind.
But it didn't walk on 2 feet.
No, that doesn't
That was bipedal.
This is quadruped.
It looks like
four legs and a tail.
I thought it was stand. Okay.
It's vaguely like Appa from
Avatar. It does
Avatar,
look like
Avatar
Appa. I was just thinking that when I was looking
small,
at the tail from
like a baby Appa.
Avatar, anyway, The Last Airbender.
This had not been made yet, so no, that's not a reference.
I'm not loving this haircut on the Contessa.
Yeah, I don't love it.
Why is her haircut? Did you decide that?
I drew it because she's always been based on Rita Hayworth, so I was using her hair from Lady from Shanghai, the short haircut.
Okay.
So that's why it is, but it's not very well drawn. I didn't do a good job with it.
Oh, you don't like, you don't think the hair is well drawn?
No, I don't think it's great. I could do better.
Okay.
Put it that way.
All right.
Anyway, listen, I'm just saying, as I see it now, I'm like, meh, don't love it.
I know. Listen, art is all up for discussion here on the podcast. I know our listeners enjoy you talking about these things.
Yeah, there's mistakes I make, which I'm consistently aware of, and it's like, oh, shit, because I don't do it now. But that's because I'm aware of it. So, yeah. Anyway, whatever.
Well, and you're having fun with that nudity that we talked about in the Deadlier Than the Male episode, mm-hmm. where as long as you don't show nipples and actual parts, you can get away.
We do show nipples. There are nipples there.
Oh, there are. They're little dots. Look at that. Little dots, little suggestions.
I guess they were being lax about it. I don't know if it was Dave Bishop at this point or who's. No, it's Matt.
It's Matt at this point.
Clearly, at this point, editorial decided a couple of nipples ain't going to hurt anybody.
But we also have a lady lounging around naked with a big necklace on, which is something that you enjoy drawing.
Yes, sure. Yes. Of course.
But we are putting a pin in this. This is going to be, because it's very long. This Thieves' World is...
Oh, is this where we're stopping?
This is where we're stopping. Thieves' World is a really long story.
Yeah.
And so we're going to put a pin in it. We're going to do a two-part episode.
Yes.
Okay. So we are closing the... basically we're ending with Contessa saying she wants to ditch Salonkin and wants Dante to help her get this war chest, this Thieves' Council war chest. That's her angle. She's doing all of this to get at that money.
Right.
Okay.
And she's asking Dante to do what you were born to do.
That's right. So Dante... Yeah, there's a lot of like birthright Dante thief stuff
Everyone's
here.
Everyone's stabbing everyone else in the back. Exactly. Why don't you get in the action,
get
Dante?
Get in on it.
Danter's old chin up.
Danter's. Indeed. Oh my God, that is totally a new nickname we're using, Daunters. Yes. So we're closing the book on Dante for today.
Yes.
But we'll be back next time with part two of Thieves' World.
Thieves' World.
And remember, folks, we are going to be at the Lawless Comic Con in Bristol on May 25th and 26th at the Doubletree Hilton. Tickets are still available. Go to lawlesscomiccon, allonword.co.uk. And we will be recording a live podcast episode at the con, or attempting to do so, as Simon is fond of saying.
Well, I am concerned about the technical issues, but yeah, we'll try.
Well, please come down and see us and join us. And our tentative date is we're going to be on the main floor of the con, apparently, at 1 p.m. on Saturday, May 25th.
Oh, boy.
So come and party with us at the 10th anniversary of Lawless Con, which they just announced that Garth Ennis will be at.
Yes.
That was a big announcement.
That is a big announcement.
That's a big guest. And we can't wait to meet you, those of you who will be there.
Yes.
So we hope you enjoyed our podcast. And if so, please subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave us ratings and reviews wherever you can, and tell your friends to join our book club and read along with us. Follow us on Instagram at PodTGDR, Facebook group, The Great Dante Read Through. Let us know what you think of the podcast, Dante, comics, whatever's on your mind. I'm Edie.
And I'm Simon.
And we will catch you next time.
Bye.